I want to thank everybody who's able to make it out this evening. In our world today, we face a chronic illness, something that has developed partially in response to our society, but also really due to our society's willingness to enable it. And that subject tonight is narcissism. Narcissism is kind of a complicated subject, but when you boil it down, it generally comes down to something called self-love. And as we'll see later in the lesson, it has to do with a certain character. It is named after a certain character from Greek mythology. Now, when we talk about our society, we talk about a society that is traditionally very individualistic. And to give you some perspective on what exactly that means, I've summed up the difference between the two main societies that exist in our world. There is the concept of collectivism. Collectivism is what you see in Japan and China and similar, more Asian countries. It's where the society centers themselves around the whole. So essentially, we would be thinking about our society first and our individual second. However, in most Western societies like our own, we deal with a lot of individualism. And this is exactly the opposite. It centers around the individual first. So when you build an individualistic society, you build one that focuses first on how we improve individual lives and then how we improve the society, versus the opposite, where you improve the society as a whole first and then hopefully the individual as a result. And to give you kind of an illustration of what this means, we take a look just at our language. When we compare Japan and the United States, we see quite a stark contrast. Here in the United States, we have a formality system that exists where we show respect to different people of different ranks and ages through a pretty simple system of I, you, we. You know, we talk about ourselves in one pronoun. We talk about others in one pronoun. You go back about 400 years ago, you hear a lot of these and thous. That used to be the old formal, and then you was the informal. As for actual honorifics, we only really have a few. Mr., Mrs., Miss. These basically give honor to the person holding them. You get a degree. You become a doctor through a doctorate, so we call you doctor. You get a lot of different designations depending on what you excel at, but still pretty simple. When you compare this to a society that focuses around everybody, a society that isn't so focused on the individual, you see a stark contrast. All of these terms down here are just talking about me. Watashi, boku, atashi, washi. They're all different ways of saying I. Depending on who you are and your relationship to another person, you use these. And if you use the wrong one, you get shamed for it. The same thing goes for all of the terms for other people, as well as their honorifics. This is just a small view into a very, very complicated society. When you make a mistake and we call someone by their first name and they want to be called by their last name, we don't make a big deal out of it. But for them, it's critical. It's something that they actually have an entire ritual devoted to. And this is just a small piece of a very complicated society. Now, the problems that come with these societies are pretty self-explanatory. As you can see, these are two perspectives. One views the individualistic society as being ideal, the other the collectivistic. In a collectivistic system, you have the benefit of treating everybody, helping everybody, making sure that everybody is taken care of first, then you second. The problem, though, is you deal with individual neglect and, of course, loss of freedom. In our society, however, we have the opposite philosophy. But there is one tiny little problem. When we focus on each individual so much, making sure that all of their needs are taken care of, what happens is narcissism can show up as a byproduct. And that's the discussion that we're talking about today. And that's really what I brought up this whole individualistic collectivistic thing, is to give you some perspective as to why exactly this is so prevalent in our society. So what is narcissism? If we take a look at the story of Narcissus, we're taking a look at a Greek character. He was essentially a very comely person, a very beautiful, very handsome person. And one day he saw himself in a pool of water, his reflection. And he fell in love with himself, so much so that he would not eat nor drink. And it resulted in his death. so that the one thing he was looking at was the one thing he loved most, himself. Now, this is a little extreme. Most people don't take out a mirror and look at themselves all day. But what they do do is act this way. We notice in our society this concept of it's all about me. Oh, you know, you need to tailor to me. You need to do things for me. You know, the service here is really horrible. You should think more about your customers. Yes and no. Now, if we take this idea and we break it down into a more psychological definition, we get this. This is provided by Ziegler, Hill, and Jordan. They say that narcissism is generally considered to be a pathological form of self-love that manifests itself or is characterized by arrogance, self-absorption, entitlement, and reactivity to criticism. Sound a little more familiar? We have a lot of arrogant people. We have a lot of people who feel entitled. We have a lot of people who feel quite absorbed in themselves and who don't like criticism. But guess what? That's just part of life. These people don't believe it, though. So that's basically what I'm going to be focusing on tonight, and that is some elements of narcissism. Again, I have this nice little graphic to remind you. It's all about me. Stuff about me. My stuff. Stuff I hate, and then others. And everything else doesn't matter. When you break it down, it comes down to selfishness, selfish love, pride, ego, and entitlement. All of which the Bible has something to say about. We're not really going to go around ego because it kind of melds into pride and entitlement. And I couldn't really find anything that said specifically ego. So what does the Bible have to say about narcissism? Let's take a look at selfishness. So selfishness is the most basic definition of narcissism, and the Bible has a lot to say about it. The very first thing that we learn is that nothing should be done through selfish ambition or conceit. It's a basic, very simple principle. When you go out, you have a job, you do something for someone else, you shouldn't be thinking about, what do I get out of it? What's going to happen for me? You know, we got a deal going out here. Let's make the best for me. No. You need to be doing things out of love, not selfish ambition. James 3:16. For where there is envy and self-seeking, confusion and every evil thing are there. Again, envy, self-seeking, this concept of selfishness, this idea of it's all about me. 2 Corinthians 5:15. This is specifically referring to Jesus. He died for all that those who live should what? No longer live for themselves. Not about you. Not about me. But rather about others. And our ultimate example, what did he do? He showed the ultimate act of selflessness. He died for them and rose again. Now, in conjunction with selfishness, there's this concept of selfish love. Again, narcissism is focused around self-love, essentially focusing just on loving yourself. Loving yourself so much that that's all you care about. Well, 2 Timothy 3, 2-4, it's a perfect description. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud. You go down a few sins and you get to unloving. Go down a few more sins and you get to lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. So this really gives you some perspective. Not only has selfishness become something just about me, but you're forgetting one of the most important parts of the equation. God. You love pleasure. You love yourself. You are unloving of others so much so that you forget about God. It's a very, very bad thing. Now, in addition to this concept of selfishness, we also have the concept of pride. Proverbs 16:18-19. Everybody should probably have heard this at one point or another. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Very simple concept. Being prideful is not a good thing. It's generally something that does lead to a fall. Most people that you meet are prideful, we consider them jerks. And what do people generally consider jerks to end up doing? Falling down at some point. Because nobody likes them. 1 John 2:16-17. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And what? The world is passing away and the lust thereof. When we think of the lust, he's basically summing up all of these various things and saying that the world is passing away and so are these things. When you engage in pride, you're going to pass away with the world. Bible has more to say. James 4, verse 6. But he gives us more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Again, God is opposed to pride, but humility he rewards. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire. He blesses the greedy and renounces the Lord. The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. So just like selfishness, we just went over this, just like selfishness a few slides over, where was it? Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Selfishness accelerated up to this point, and pride does exactly the same thing. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire, he blesses the greedy, renounces the Lord. The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. You see, when you become the center of the universe, suddenly God has no place. Suddenly others are this tiny little speck on some distant planet, and you are the sun, providing light to all. But that's not the truth whatsoever. But that's the result of pride. That's the result of when your ego, your sense of pride inflames so much that you have no room for anyone but yourself. Let's talk about entitlement. Entitlement's kind of an interesting concept. Again, not really talked about specifically in the Bible, but we do get some views in terms of work and one other thing which we'll talk about in just a moment. 2 Thessalonians 3, 10 through 12. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. Now such persons we command and encourage in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work quietly and to earn their own living. Entitlement is this concept that I deserve things because I'm entitled to it. If you ever watch a lot of daytime television, you'll get commercials talking about you may be entitled to this and you may be entitled to that. And in our society, we have these things called rights. In fact, we've devoted part of our foundational law to them, the Bill of Rights. And that's a beautiful thing. You know, universal rights, we're all created equal, this is wonderful things. But you go too far and you end up with this. You end up thinking that people owe you things just for existing. People walk in, well, I am the patron of this restaurant. I have spent $5 here over the past week. You owe me something. Like, no, no one owes you anything. Further on, Luke 22, 25 through 27. The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them. And those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. Kind of an ironic term, really. For who is greater, he who sits at the table or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? Yet I, this is Christ speaking, among you am the one who serves. A few sermons ago that I preached, I talked about the Roman government. And this is one of the things that is just mind-boggling to all of the Gentiles, even to the Jews, was this concept of serving. But this is something that has become more and more, this is something that used to be a little more persuasive in our society, that leaders should lead, not sit on a throne cracking a whip. But this is not what they were used to at all. Every single Gentile who read this, every single Jew who understood this, knew this is exactly the case. You can even put the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The Sadducees of the Jews exercised lordship over them. And those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. It's just the truth. They have this idea that, you know, we're up here on this pedestal, and everybody below us, well, we're just entitled to receive their work. But that's not true at all. In fact, Christ completely flips this over and says, I am among you as the one who serves. And they all know he has to be the greatest. There's no way. He's the Son of God. Yet he's serving. Yet he has taken himself down from this throne up here and brought himself down to wash the feet of the disciples. Kind of really spits in the face of entitlement. 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his own, especially those of his household, he has denied his faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Some people feel so entitled they feel that they don't have anything to give anyone, not even their own family. Responsibility. So this is the other half of entitlement that we'll be talking about. 1 Corinthians 4:7. For who makes you differ from another, and what do you have that you did not receive? Now, if you did indeed receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? Again, this concept that for some reason I just you know, inherited all of this. It's all mine. It's all by my own hand. It's like, no, no, you have responsibility here. No, you received it from someone. You have a responsibility to the one who gave it to you. Ecclesiastes 5:19, for as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, and had given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. Again, nothing that you have, nothing you see around here is anything that we deserve. We're not entitled to it. It's a gift. And what does Luke 12:48 have to say about gifts? For everyone to whom much is given, from him much will be required. If you go back into the context of this verse, you see that it's talking about him who is beaten with many stripes and is beaten with few. Basically, the person who knew more about his situation is being punished more severely versus the person who didn't understand. He was given much understanding, and as such, much was required of him. It's no different with gift giving. It's no different with any other thing that has been given to us. And as such, anyone who thinks that they're entitled, well, yeah, you're not. So what is the response to these things? Well, to selfishness comes to selflessness. Specifically, love. This is, of course, agape. This is this concept that, again, was abhorrent to any self-respecting Gentile, any self-respecting Roman citizen, or even Jew. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord God. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and great commandment." And the next verse, which is also found as a parallel in Galatians 5:14 and Mark 12:31, the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one commandment: love your neighbor as yourself. We quickly go back over agape. What is it? This is not, you know, have sex with your neighbor. No. This is not, let's just go out and, you know, really like my neighbor. No, this is about serving your neighbor. It's this concept that the Gentiles had no use for, they didn't want to have any use for. So Jesus repurposed it. And he said very clearly that this is a serving love. This is a sacrificing love. This is a selfless love versus our very selfish love. What do I get out of it? No, not what you get out of it. It's what others get out of you. And not only this, we're expected to go the extra mile. So not only are we not supposed to be selfish and narcissistic, but we're rather to do the exact opposite. Even going as far as loving our enemies, doing good, and we talked earlier about not receiving. Well, in this case, lending and hoping for nothing in return. Not like, oh yeah, well, they might give me something back. No, don't even go there. Don't even hope for anything in return. Just give it up, expecting you may never get it back. And what? Your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. For he is kind to the unthankful and evil. It's a simple principle, but it's difficult to apply. Again, our society, this is very pervasive. Narcissism is something that has already got its own psychological term, and a lot of people are accused of being narcissists. So you can understand how this is such a difficult term for us to apply. When I even think about my own job, I think about the people I talk with. Have you ever done this and just thought about the things that they say? It's amazing how selfish it is. And you have to say, you know, I'm a victim of my own curse. I am the one who's done this as well. I'm right there with them, talking about, oh, I have to do this, and oh, I have to help someone, oh, I have to do this. But guess what? That's not what is expected of Christians. No complaining. Hope for nothing in return. Something that my coworkers would struggle to understand, I'm sure yours at some point would as well. And not just selfless love, but selfless service. This is the other concept that kind of goes along with this idea of selflessness, the very anti of what Gentiles were used to and what we as Gentiles are used to. 1 Corinthians 9:19. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all that I might win the war. And if I recall correctly, this also has, if you go to the next verse, you'll end up hearing about becoming all things to all people, that I can win the more. So basically, you know, to the Jews, I'm a Jew. To the Gentiles, I'm a Gentile. I stoop down to their level. They have a weakness. I deal with their weakness. You know, they can't eat pork. I respect that. I do whatever is necessary in order to win people over. Galatians 5:13. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Again, something we're very familiar with. We have the Statue of Liberty, right? Only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. Man, this is the philosophy of America, isn't it? You just go down the street and you see people handing out money and just so ready to help other people. You know, we have liberty. That's great. But how much do we do with it? Are we really fulfilling this, or are we acting a little more narcissistic than we'd like to admit to? Luke 9:23. Then he said to them all, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him do what? Deny himself. Take up his cross daily and follow me. Rich young ruler, what do I have to do to be saved?" Well, you already know the law and the prophets. You know all of these things, right? One thing more you need to do. Give up all that you have and follow me. Just a crazy, selfless idea. And of course, we all know the story. The rich ruler goes crying away because he knows that if he has to do all of this, it's a high price to pay for him. He has everything. Giving up everything is a lot. But guess what? We've been called to liberty, and part of that is the liberty of choice. And if in order to escape this world, this is what it takes. It takes selflessness. Now, we talked about selfishness and its reciprocal selfishness, selflessness. Then we have, of course, pride and humility. James 4:10, "Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up." Psalms 34:2, "Not completely getting rid of pride, but rather reorientating it in the way of my soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad." As servants of God, we are to be humble. We are to reduce ourselves. We are to become servants. We are to reduce our very thought process to that of a servant. And part of that is recognizing, A, that there is somebody above us, and that is God. Philippians 2:3-4. "Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, esteem others better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man on the things of others." So first, as part of a cure to boasting and pride, you have recognizing God. But not just that, recognizing others. Again, tying this in with this concept of servitude. I am not the greatest. I am not entitled. I am not the one at the top of the rung. You know, you get a new position, you have more power, you have more authority, maybe you're a manager or whatever the case may be. It's tempting to go out and say, "Hey, I can make all the decisions here." But remember, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, esteem every single one of your coworkers, everybody who's below you, everybody who's above you, everybody who's on the same level as you, as better than you. Strange concept, but very, very important. And then, of course, the ultimate example of humility. And that is, of course, Philippians 2:5-8. "Let this mind be in you, which also was in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, the ultimate form of power and authority, thought it not robbery to be equal to God, not a thing to be grasped or held on to, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of man, and being found in the fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross." It's a great example of just curbing what would otherwise be considered as self-importance. You have this, essentially, on equality with God. Creates the universe, creates man, creates all things that are necessary for life. I mean, just think about this. I mean, look at this. This is an amazing device. Do you know how many different things are involved in making this operate and work with this and communicate? Just think about something simple like wood. Why in the world isn't this thing lying on the ground? Why is it pasted together? Well, guess what? Christ made this possible. He has unlimited knowledge and understanding in ways that we do not even begin to understand. And yet, as the ultimate supreme being right underneath God, he lowered himself to us. Could you imagine Christ sitting on top, you know, just in heaven, like, "I am too entitled for this. I mean, look at me, the most entitled person that ever existed. To be the most spoiled child you could possibly think of. Christ." Now, of course, all of this, to be careful with that, is not in any way serious. but rather rhetorical. But could you just imagine this spoiled brat? I mean, the one person who could possibly be a spoiled brat would be Jesus. To sit in a palace of light, to lower himself? What? We have people coming, you know, to different places that we work at and we see all the time, and they have the gall to talk about being entitled. Compare it to this. And yet the most entitled person lowered himself and allowed himself to be murdered in the most shameful way that the Romans could think possible. You feeling a little humbler now? This flies in the face of our society. We talk about being a Christian society, but I don't think we'll ever quite get to this point. I don't think we'll ever really understand just the kind of sacrifices that were made here, because A, it's difficult in our society, but B, just to be on this kind of level and to give up what was given up here. Now, when we take this all as a whole, and we kind of wrap this up into one package, and we just review what we've talked about, we have this concept of narcissism, this concept of self-love, self-importance, arrogance, ego, pride. We see that the Bible talks about it and has a lot of strong words to say about it. Selfishness is not a good thing. Boastfulness, pride, is not a good thing. It's going to cause a fall. And in addition to that, anyone who thinks that they are owed something by the world has nothing owed to them at all. But rather, our responses should not be that for some reason we deserve something, not be that for some reason we are owed anything, but rather that we should esteem others better than ourselves, that we should lower ourselves to their servants, even when we are in the highest place of authority, and should remember not to think of our own interests, but the interests of others. When we keep these things in mind and we really make application, we can appreciate a little more what the ultimate example of this did for us. Now comes the question, what about you? When you reflect upon your life, when you reflect upon going to work or talking with your family or dealing with anything, how humble are you? Are you boastful? Are you prideful? How selfless are you? We're about to come to one of the most selfish times of year. Christmas, the season of gift giving. People talk about, oh yeah, you know, I get to go out and I get to do this. And you know, I just can't wait until I get all of my presents. But guess what? As you get older, you start to realize that there's just less and less that you need. There's less and less that you want. Because guess what? It's not important to begin with. If you get caught up in it, it can either be a season of giving or a season of receiving. When we think about our everyday lives, how do we view opportunities? When, you know, the classic example, you have the last slice of pie. Who gets the last slice of pie? Are you saying to yourself, I just can't wait for my wife to be able to get the last slice of pie? You know, there's a kid down there who really would like the slice of pie. I just can't wait to give it to them. Or am I thinking, ooh, that's a nice slice of pie. You know what? I hope he doesn't want that slice of pie. It's my slice of pie. You know, I wonder if he won't notice if I eat the slice of pie. It sounds ridiculous, but it drives the point home. We live in a society, it's all about us. But we have to curb this. Because if we don't, we'll be rejected. If we don't, we will be chaff. And it's not a pleasant thing. So if there's anything that we can do for you tonight, if perhaps you have some humility to gain, if perhaps something has touched you in this lesson, or even there's something else that we can provide you for, we'd like to serve you. Not as people who feel that we're better than you because you had a problem we didn't, but rather because we want to serve you. And we want to be there for you and show that selfless attitude that Christ showed us. And we offer that, whether you need to be baptized, whether you need to confess a sin, or perhaps there's a concern you have. There's something in your life that's troubling you that God and we can help you with through prayer and petition. We offer you that opportunity as we stand and sing the invitation song.